A number of different dictionary companies have announced their 2017 Word of the Year. This hour, we want to hear yours. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Patricia O'Connor is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. We'll talk about the 2017 words of the year, and also November and December are usually very good months for retailers. Convincing us to keep buying in January is a challenge. We'll talk about white sales and some of the other archaic terms used by retailers. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Happy New Year. We are starting off 2018 with a conversation with our favorite English language expert, Patricia O'Connor. She is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language, and she blogs at grammarphobia.com. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. I hope you're wearing your mittens there in the studio. And
I was actually wearing fingerless gloves yesterday in the studio,
but the
heat's working today, so
we're
doing a little bit better.
Good.
So I want to start off by talking a little bit about Words of the Year. And if you have a nomination for the 2017 Word of the Year, you are welcome to join our conversation. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Keep it clean. It's my only request, but we'd love to hear your nominations. And Pat, a lot of people love to pick a word of the year. A lot of dictionary companies like to do this. And it's interesting that everybody seems to have kind of a different approach to it.
Right. Well, you know, there are people who submit words that they hate. This word ought to be banned. Or this word was the most looked up word of the year, even though it may be a word that's 50 years old and is in everyday use. It doesn't mean it, you know. So you have to kind of define your terms. But most companies try to choose a word that had some significance in the national conversation of the previous year. It had something to do with events.
Well, and so some of the companies just pick, and you know, obviously with the websites, this must have been a new innovation when the web became very common. It's the companies
right.
just pick the most looked up word, which I find to be fairly interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. But you know, I have to be honest with you, I really regard most of this Word of the Year stuff as publicity on the parts of the dictionary company.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they all have to come in, and then in recent years it's happened that newspapers start picking their own words of the year. This is mostly in Britain that newspapers have started to, the Telegraph's Word of the Year, the Guardian's Word of the Year. You know, and like some of them pick rather unusual words like covfefe, which was a word that Donald Trump used in a tweet. He obviously used a word that I don't know. Nobody knew what it meant.
Right, probably, right. A lot of people thought it was
like
a typo, and he doubled
right.
down on it and said,
right.
"No,
but
those who know."
But it was almost immediately forgotten. So why should it be Word of the Year?
Right.
Some of the Word of the Year stuff gets a little far afield.
Absolutely. Well, and it was interesting. I was looking them up this morning. So Dictionary.com and Merriam-Webster both went with top lookups, and they're really
right.
interesting. Dictionary.com went with complicit
yes.
as one of their top lookups, and Merriam-Webster went with feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Which was one of their top lookups, which
yeah.
I think that's interesting. I mean, that does tell
right.
us a little bit about what's going on
right.
in the
like,
world.
To use feminism as an example, Merriam-Webster said it had several distinct spikes in lookups during the year. For instance, last January, a year ago, there was the Women's March in Washington. Then in February, Kellyanne Conway said she didn't consider herself a feminist, so everybody started looking it up. Then searches spiked again during the Hulu series broadcast of The Handmaid's Tale. And then finally, there's been a surge in the late summer and fall, and it's probably still going on, with the Me Too movement and the wave of revelations about sexual harassment and misconduct. Feminism really was Merriam-Webster's most looked-up word of the year. But, of course, for many women, feminism is always word of the year. So it all depends on your perspective, I think.
Right. And I also saw, this was kind of interesting, Oxford Dictionaries didn't choose a commonly looked-up word. They just chose their own word. And they've kind of been catching a lot of flack for it.
Yeah, they have taken a lot of flack. They chose the word youthquake, which a lot of people were scratching their heads and saying, what's a youthquake? It's actually a very old word. Diana Vreeland, the editor of Vogue, came up with it, I think, in the 60s or 70s, to refer to the youthfulness of fashion. And I think OxfordDictionaries.com chose it because they felt it had a significant cultural, political, or social impact during the last year.
The definition they used was a significant cultural, political, or social change arising from the actions or influence of young people.
Right, but, you know, some of us might be forgiven for saying, what youthquake?
Right.
I can't really think of any significant cultural, political, or social change arising from the influence of youth, unless maybe it was in France with the election of the new young liberal president there. But youth hasn't made itself very heard in the last year.
So it's very interesting. I know you don't like the banned words, but you consider one of the lists that's coming soon to be the most important list from the American Dialect Society. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, the American Dialect Society is formed mainly of academic linguists, or at least professionals in the word field, like lexicographers and such, and authors. And each year they announce a list of words in a lot of different categories. They choose the word or expression of the year, but then they also choose notable words in half a dozen categories. But they won't be doing that until this Friday when they have their annual convention. That's almost a week away.
And the nominees aren't even known before that day, right?
No, they only announce the nominees at that same dinner, so we can't even talk about those. But undoubtedly, a lot of these same words are going to be in there: complicit feminism, probably, and fake news, which has been the top vote getter at some other dictionary companies, mainly British. But I wouldn't be surprised if fake news wins the American Dialect Society in the voting, because it's fake news. It's something that it's not only been in the news a lot in the last year, but it's very important. And talk about a significant cultural impact. And it's not just been here, but I'm not talking about the kind of fake news that when President Trump says somebody, the New York Times runs a well-known statistic and he says that's fake news. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about news that really is fake, that's generated by trolls, pretty, you know, lowly paid internet labor, often in another country, frequently in another country, and they generate false information that's distributed by automated bot accounts, BOT, bot accounts that are invented, and they distribute misinformation in order to influence political movements in other countries for reasons of their own.
Right, and we certainly have learned a lot about that and the influence of that this year.
Yes, and they've had not just influence in the United States, but they've probably influenced elections also in England, the Brexit vote for one thing. England, they tried in France, Germany and Spain. So this is a serious global problem. It's a very real threat to democracy because democracy really depends on the public's access to information that it can trust.
Now,
the majority has to know what's true before it can vote intelligently.
Now, I'm curious, just thinking about the linguistics of this, that's a phrase, not a word. So is that, does that create a problem?
No, it's not a problem. Often the word of the year is an expression. They use word of the year as a shorthand, but sometimes it's expression of the year. It's often been an expression in the past. I'm trying to think of, there aren't very many words of the year in Germany. Actually, you know, other countries do this kind of thing, too. In Germany, the word of the year is two words. It's a phrase. It's really inside politics in Germany. It's called Jamaika aus. And in Germany, aus means out. But that phrase isn't anti-Jamaican. The reference is to the colors of the Jamaican flag, which are black, yellow, and green. And those happen to be the colors of three important political parties in Germany, the Conservatives, the Liberals, and the Green Party. Now, those parties in the past year tried and failed to form a three-way coalition, but the negotiations broke down. So Jamaika aus means that coalition is out. And that was Germany's word of the year.
Interesting.
Very, very, very localized interest there.
Right, but definitely something that a lot of Germans are thinking about.
Sure.
We have a break coming up, but I'll read a couple of nominees for word of the year. This one's from Earl in Grinnell. He says, as one among millions who traveled to see the eclipse, I suggest umbrophile.
Ah.
And this one's from Bob. He says, not one word, but of high impact, me too, which I'm sure will be many people's word of 2017.
Yes.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Patricia O'Connor. She is our English language expert, author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. And we want to get you in on this conversation as well. We've been talking about 2017 Words of the Year. We would love to hear your nomination for the 2017 Word of the Year. Again, keep it clean. We'd also love to hear about your language questions, your pet peeves. Join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here today. She's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. And we've been talking so far about Words of the Year for 2017. We'd love to hear your nomination for Word of the Year. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get to the phones. Steve is on the line in Parkersburg. Hi, Steve. Steve, are you there? Oh, I think we've lost Steve, but you can give us a call.
Oh, maybe Steve froze to death before he could answer.
I hope not. I hope not. You're, of course, talking to us from sunny Florida. So
yeah, well, it's not so sunny, but it's Florida.
Right. It's not as cold as it is here.
Right.
All right. 866-780-9100. Judy is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Judy.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your nomination?
Well, my nomination is Pivot. P-I-V-O-T, and I've been hearing it probably for the last 8 or 9 months here and there, and it seems like I've been hearing it more than usual, mm-hmm. and I think it's because it's used as, change of pace or change of subject.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so intentionally changing the subject to something else.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And it's also used for change of opinion.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah. So that was my word, and I really don't have too much else to share with you. Yeah.
All right, Judy, thanks a lot for your call. That is one that we have heard a lot of this year, an intentional use of changing the subjects. But it also, the pace of news right now, I feel like we pivot whether we want to or not.
Well, you know, the thing about pivot, it makes it sound like a skill, that you're able to pivot. It sounds kind of gymnastic, whereas it used to be called flip-flopping, which made you sound helpless or undecided or you know, just kind of not being able to make up your mind.
Right,
pivot
right.
Although it sounds like it was deliberate.
Although pivoting doesn't necessarily mean moving to the opposite opinion. It just means looking another direction, thinking about something else.
Yes, yes.
Very interesting. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your 2017 words of the year or questions, comments, your language, pet peeves. We'll take it all. And let's talk. This is what you originally wanted to talk about, Pat. It's January. This is a time when retailers have to work really hard to keep us buying like we did in November and December. And so you brought up the term white sale, which is something that we hear a lot of in January.
Well, I was interested in white sale because, well, we had a question about it from a reader of our blog, but also I happened to be reading a book written in the, just before the turn of the century, the turn of the 20th century, late 1800s, and the term white sale showed up, and I thought, what do you know? And so when I was doing some checking into it, I found some interesting stuff. You could call white sale kind of the word of the month of January, because it usually happens in January, sometimes extending into February. It's typically a sale of household linens, like sheets, towels, table linens, and so on. Now, these things aren't normally white. They're bright patterns, all colors of the rainbow. But at one time, they were mostly white or undyed. So they were referred to as white goods or white stuffs. The word stuff was an old term for cloth or fabric. So household linens were called white goods as early as 1807. That's when the OED has the earliest mention of it. And someone had written at the time, an English scientist wrote that about one half of imported cottons are consumed in white goods. And the usage was apparently common in Iowa in the latter half of the 19th century. There's a reference to it in a Waterloo newspaper, the Iowa State Reporter, in 1878. It had an advertisement saying, "Remember the linen and white goods sale at Glover and Arthur's." But the actual phrase white sale, that was white goods sale. The phrase white sale came up later, generally around the 1880s. For instance, the OED quotes a story in the Cleveland Plain Dealer saying, "At 8 o'clock yesterday morning, J.L. Hudson's furnishings goods departments were packed with eager buyers being attracted there by the announcement of a, quote, white sale." And they put quotes around the term white sale. Now, we often call these household items linens, though they're more likely to be made of cotton or a cotton blend. But although technically linen is cloth woven from flax, the term is also used, and it has been for many centuries, to just mean undergarments or household items like sheets, towels, napkins, tablecloths, that kind of thing, linens. But sometimes linens or muslins that were their natural color and not fully bleached were also called brown goods.
Hmm.
Now, that's an old term. It was used for fabrics that either were unbleached or that had been dyed a brownish color. But getting into the 20th century, both the terms brown goods and white goods were resurrected with more modern meanings. White goods came to mean large household appliances that were traditionally white, like refrigerators and washing machines. And brown goods came to mean electrical appliances like radios, TVs, and phonographs that were mostly housed in brown plastic or bakelite cases. Those terms are fading out now, but you still see them sometimes in labor statistics. You know, you'll say workers in the white goods industries. That means big household appliances. And if they say the brown goods industries, it means small household appliances or electronics.
Oh, interesting. So yeah. I don't recall ever seeing an advertisement of a brown sale. That doesn't sound nearly as appealing somehow.
No, but if you had lived in the 19th century, you would have seen ads for brown goods. And often women went to buy brown goods. This is fabric sold by the yard. Brown goods were used for making the everyday ordinary workaday petticoats, say, or aprons. They didn't make them out of white cloth necessarily, unless they were more dressy. They used brown cloth because it was not only cheap, but they didn't have to get it white when they washed it. See, getting things white was a problem in the 19th century.
Yes.
You may remember the term bluing. Do you ever remember that?
Yeah.
Women added bluing to their white laundry to try to get it, you know, whitish again. And the result was often that things came out looking a weird bluish gray. But this was before bleach was really widely available, and then later it was bleach. And now it's not so much of a problem because we don't have well water. Well, a lot of us don't have well water that's tainted with minerals that discolor fabrics. Or if you do, you can get filters that will filter it out. Anyway, that's white sale.
All right. And we do see it a lot this time of year. Why do you think January is the time for that?
Well, January has typically been a big month for sales by retailers, both because they want to get people back in the stores after they've shot their wad from spending on Christmas, but they also have merchandise they want to move so they can get their new spring lines in. So you'll see January sales a lot. That's also a term. January sale has been used since 1865 in advertisements. Their usual January sale. So it was not only white sales, but just general January sales.
I enjoy some of the archaic terms that are used in retailer. I mean, every year we hear about Black Friday, and people say, "Okay, again, why is it called Black Friday?" And we discuss that. But it is interesting how these words or phrases have been used for so long that they've actually lost their original meaning.
Yes, yeah. You would find. I love reading advertising in mid-19th century newspapers, and now because of digitalization, you can actually do that. You can search for terms like brown goods, and you can search for fustian. Fustian is a good word. It used to be a very common cloth. It was a heavy kind of twill.
Spell that for me.
Clothes. F is in Frank, U-S-T-I-A-N,
okay.
Fustian. And it was a heavy twill. And work clothes were made out of it, and men's pants. And so it was. Women bought fustian a lot to make clothes out of. Yeah.
And it a word that has
before Levi Strauss came along.
Right,
you know,
right.
Made it easy for people.
Well, that is interesting that you can have access to these words that have been hard
right.
to come by.
Right, and you find lost words like dimity, which was a kind of delicate fabric, dress fabric for women. And, oh gosh, I wish I could remember some of the other ones, but they're all, dotted Swiss. Actually, dotted Swiss was around even in my childhood, but it was just a kind of a light cotton that had little dots of actually raised texture. I mean, it looked like polka dots almost, but very fine dots. And kids' clothes were often made of dotted Swiss. I love those old words.
Well, and some of the words that were used in retail, I feel like, you know, literature keeps a lot of old words alive, but not
yes.
necessarily the words that were used for business purposes.
True.
Well, we have a couple more emails and thoughts about word of the year for 2017. You're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here is a suggestion or a thought from Dan. He says, woke. I don't mind slang, but this one just seems too forced. So that's his word, but it's not one that he likes. And that is interesting.
Woke.
I actually heard a conversation about the word woke with Spike Lee on Fresh Air, because he used to use the phrase wake up, and that
uh-huh.
seems to have evolved to the term woke. But that's certainly something that we've heard a lot this year.
And, you know, it's a really, really ancient word. A long time ago, I did some research into woke and awake and waken, and it goes way back into early Old English, and it's been in since the earliest writings that were done in Old English, woke.
Interesting. Well, it's certainly become a
much
more...
We have a lot of words for it. We can awake, we can awaken,
right?
We can wake, and we can say that we woke.
And of course now the usage has changed, so you can say I am woke.
I'm woke.
Or you are woke.
Yeah.
Here's a thought from Glenn. He says, I am particularly incensed by language and news professionals giving forum to and thus legitimizing the combination of the words fake and news. You should know better. So that's directed at me. The definition of news is the declaration of an absolute true item. It cannot be fake. And to facilitate the use of these extremely harmful notions undermines the credibility of the speaker or author. Its use basically proves the ignorance of the user. And now, of course, Glenn, I'm going to push back on that. Because
you're quoting the President of the United States.
Well, but no, I mean, the reason I would push back is that we have seen so much that has been presented as if it is news,
mm-hmm.
but it is untrue.
It is fake.
So that's where
true.
The usage comes from,
and also,
it definitely describes something real.
It's undermining truth in journalism it's a very insidious thing to do. To undermine people's faith in freedom of the press, because the press is all we have to tell us what's true and what's not. And when we have these people sitting around inventing things in at computers in Slovenia or Macedonia and spreading it through bot accounts that are set up in Russia and flooding American Facebook accounts with it by the millions, what is it, 26 million? People, Facebook accounts have been flooded with this phony news. That's a very insidious thing, and it's something we should all be really aware of. And if something comes from a source that you don't know, then I think you should assume it's untrue until it's proven otherwise.
Well, and it's interesting to want to reject the phrase because there.
Yeah, we shouldn't be rejecting the phrase.
We don't have other ways to describe.
Right. I mean, you could call it fabrication.
Right.
But
I'd love to hear suggestions for different ways to describe it. But you know, it's certainly a phrase of the moment. Let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Paul is on the line in Russell. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year. 'Tis a bit cold. Nominations would be two words that I think are tangentially related. And one is chain migration, particularly as it relates to the old phrase third world countries, underdeveloped countries, countries where people don't share the American value system. So chain migration.
Wait. You're going to have to tell us a little bit more about what you're trying to say. So you're talking about immigrants coming or moving from one place to another, following people who've gone before them.
I think chain migration, as it's practiced presently, we have seen the results of that across the world, and it is literally changing the face of Germany, Norway, Finland, America. We've seen in the news recently of the propagators of heinous acts came about as a result of chain migration.
Sounds like a screed.
Yeah. So you had another word, Paul.
What's your other one?
My other word was snowflake. And before I go to that, I would like to
That's another screed word.
I'd like to differ with your guest on one item. She said flip-flop was the equivalent to pivot. And the example she used was that flip-flop is used when somebody wants to change the topic. That isn't true.
Flip-flop is changing opinion.
Right. We talked about that and the differences. But, Paul, thanks for your suggestions. We've got a break coming up, so we are going to take that short break. We'll be back with more conversation with Patricia O'Connor. She is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. We'd love to hear your questions, your comments, your English language pet peeves, your suggestions for Word of 2017. This is Talk of Iowa. The proud owner of the quality goes in before that name goes on. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about language. Our English language expert is Patricia O'Connor. She's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. And we've been talking about words of the year. We'd love to hear your suggestion for word of the 2017. You're also welcome to join the conversation with your English language questions, your English language pet peeves as well. Again, the number 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pat, I want to talk about something that you've written about on your blog recently, and I found it to be very interesting because this is a trick of language that people use in many different ways. You wrote about the corporate we. You know, we have the royal we have the corporate we, but we also, it's something that we use to talk about ourselves and our identity. Tell me a little bit more about our use of we.
Well, I'll talk about the corporate we. I mean, when I say we all use it, if I say that, I'm meaning not only I, but the listeners and you, Charity. Mm-hmm. So it's clear who the we is. Corporate we is a little different. When you look up a company website, often it will say, we are the leader in this field, or our customers say this. They use second-person plural or first-person plural words like we, our, ourselves, and so on. And this actually is a sort of 20th century phenomenon because in the old days, a company or a firm or an organization, say a law firm or an institution, would in writing about itself, would use it. The British Museum is proud of its collection and prides itself on its ability to blah, blah, blah. Now, people would say, at the New York Public Library, we pride ourselves. We have been an institution since such and such. We pride ourselves on our ability to do such and such. And that is a corporate pronoun, really, that was started to be used only in about the early 20th century. But it got a real surge in the 1980s when there was a very influential book. What was it called? I can't think of what it was now, but it was very influential at the time, and it discussed the corporate we and its importance in using it, in companies' ability to use that in order to draw in the reader, the listener, whatever, so they should use it in commercials and in corporate documents. And it has a way of including not only the other, reminding people that corporations are made of people, they aren't just monolithic things, but also that they try to incorporate the consumer as part of themselves, as a part of the family, so that when they brag about themselves, for instance, say, we've had this great track record or whatnot, it's not as if, it's easy to criticize someone for bragging about something if he uses his own name, or in the case of a corporation writing about itself, it would look like the corporation was bragging about itself. But when it uses we, it seems to make it a big group of people. So anyway, that corporate we is now the norm rather than the exception in corporate writing. You find it everywhere across the board. You almost never find a corporation referring to itself as it, even though it's a thing.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mentioned the royal we. We also have the editorial we.
Sure. The royal we has been around since the Middle Ages. And this is when a monarch, usually British monarch, of course, is going to issue an edict. And these monarchs usually have in the past spoke about themselves in the third person. The king wishes to say that. Now, starting in the 1400s, they began using, we wish to say that. And sometimes they will use a mixture of the two. The queen wishes to say, and we wish our subjects a happy Christmas, that kind of thing. So that's quite well old and established. And another established usage is the authorial we, where an author writing a book will use we to mean, in the editorial sense, the editorial we, it's sometimes called. And this was often used in, first used in newspaper editorials, where the newspaper would say, we wish to call attention to something or other. And they were referring to the newspaper as we.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, we've got a number of people on the line who would like to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. David is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hi. I guess we are going to propose the term progressive, which I think is just civil for Marxist-Leninists. And you've heard a lot in 2017 and even more in 2018.
That's really not true. Progressivism, when it was first really talked about as a political movement, was in the days of Theodore Roosevelt, and he meant forward-looking. Nobody would call Theodore Roosevelt a Marxist-Leninist, and I don't think that the term progressive is used to mean Marxist-Leninist today. That's not the understanding of most people.
Well, and
we agree to disagree.
Yeah, okay.
Well, and you feel like that was the political zeitgeist of 2017? David?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your nomination. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Janet is on the line next in Coralville. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I tried to tell the man I talked to that he should do this because I'm hoarse, kind of.
Well, I can hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I just thought of another one that I wrote down that I had gotten the kids was the Wii, W-I-I, that you play tennis with and all that stuff. And that was fun. And when we went down south, I ordered a poached egg and got a pork steak.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I said, want a poached egg? And it was a poke steak. And then I do remember the other fabric, too, that was seersucker. You remember that?
Oh, yes. And you can still buy seersucker.
Oh, I loved it.
Yes,
I loved
still
it.
Around. It's good summer fabric. For people who don't know, seersucker is a weave that has little bumps in it. You'd know it if you saw it. It has little bumps throughout, and they serve to keep you cool in the summer by keeping the air moving.
Interesting. Well,
air near your skin.
Yep, I know seersucker well. Maybe not as fashionable as it once was. But Janet,
no.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I think perhaps taking away from our conversation this hour, the word of the year might be political.
Yeah.
Here's a suggestion from an anonymous writer. My nomination is akin to fake news. It's alternative facts, which is another term
that shouldn't exist. That's been suggested a lot of times as word of the year. Yes.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. John is on the line in Fairfield. Hi, John. Oh, we seem to have lost John. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tessa in Iowa City is with us. Hi, Tessa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your word?
Tweet storm.
All right. Tweet storm. You feel
tweet
like
storm.
That describes 2017?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
It does.
Yeah, Tessa, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Here is a pet peeve for you, Pat, from another Patricia. The word anyway now seems to have become anyways. I missed the memo. Is it accepted by everyone but me?
No, it's not accepted. It's akin to anywheres. I looked for it everywhere. I can't find it anywheres. And then anyways is another, it's a variation on a theme. But no, it's not considered acceptable. It's still slangy, informal. But I don't think it's been used any more in 2017 than it ever was. It's been around for a very long time.
but has not ceased to be irritating.
No.
All right, here's one from Stan. He just wants to bring up the subject of apostrophe abuse. His example was he has recorded 11 CDs, apostrophe S, in the 70s, apostrophe S.
And yeah.
Abuse is something that the people complain about a lot.
Right. They're not really needed there. But I should say that in the past, now I'm getting hoarse. In the past, a lot of style books did endorse the use of an apostrophe with decades, like 70s and 80s. Now most of them don't because they're not needed. So I wouldn't call it wrong. I would just say it's a style practice that's not followed by most people anymore.
All right. Although I think that we see apostrophes used wrong in many other ways.
As in plurals.
And that does seem to be getting worse.
Like,
maybe that's just me.
As in dogs. Like four dogs. I saw four dogs, D-O-G apostrophe S. You know, don't use them in an ordinary plural. Please.
How do you feel about people have rocks engraved with their family name put in front of their homes? How do you feel about the apostrophe S there?
Yeah, see, that doesn't work either. If you mean that there are Smiths living here, it would be just S-M-I-T-H-S.
Right, but you could be I've wrestled with this because you could be trying to indicate that this belongs to the Smiths.
Yes, but even in that case, the apostrophe would be misplaced because it should go after the final S.
All right.
If you meant this is the Smiths' home, it would be S-M-I-T-H-S apostrophe.
All right, now I feel completely justified in finding those to be problematic.
Yes.
This is from Maribeth. Wondering if your guest would speak to the common use of the word so at the beginning of sentences. I thought it was a word that suggested a cause-effect relationship, but it seems to have taken a more generic place as a sentence starter.
Yeah, it is. It now has it, that is, I don't think there's any turning back on that. I won't say it's correct usage, but it's a filler. You will often hear it, even on National Public Radio. Interviewers will say, so tell us about this, or so that's, so do you have any more to add? It's just kind of a weak conjunction.
I feel like it's
start
actually
another something or other.
Replaced or ah. It's something to say when you're not quite ready to say what
it's
you need
not
to say.
Like, it's not as if you're saying, you are using a word.
Although it may be as irritating to people as saying ah. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hi, and I would add to that, basically was very popular when you were gathering your thoughts in the past. I think that's become a little redundant now.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately,
people would say, in the final analysis.
Yes, it's adding on.
Right.
Unfortunately, my word of the year would have to be natural disaster, because I just heard it all the time, and deservedly so. It was just a horrible year for disasters.
It was
horrible.
Terrible. Two terrible hurricanes, Irma and Harvey, and forest fires, horrible fires.
Absolutely. I think that's a strong
Yeah, and
droughts
out west. So natural disaster really did get a workout.
Jim, thank you so much for calling, and Happy New Year. Mike is on the line next in Milo. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, what's your word?
My word is entrenchment. As has been proven, people having a belief of what something is, and no matter what the experts say, like you're a linguistic expert, telling them something, they still believe that you are wrong, although they have no expertise in the subject.
I think that's also a strong contender for the year. Mike, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, I should mention, in Spain, a language foundation came up with the Spanish word of the year that I think is very interesting. The word is aporophobia, A-P-O-R-O. O-B-I-A. And it means fear of the poor or rejection of the poor. And it was coined by a Spanish philosopher, Adela Cortina, who said that the words xenophobia and racism are often used to explain disdain toward immigrants and refugees, when actually the aversion is more often caused not by the immigrants' foreignness, but by their poverty. Which is something to really think about, because we don't object to rich immigrants. We never object to rich immigrants. It's poor ones. So I think that aporophobia is an interesting word.
Very interesting. We have this email. This goes back to the corporate we were talking about before from Maryland. She says, I have noticed that Terry Gross says to a guest, thank you for talking to us. Is this an example of the corporate we?
Well, yes, because they're talking to her directly. But I think she means to either NPR as a corporation, or she means to her and the listeners.
Yeah, I would suspect she means her and the listeners.
Her and the listeners, yes. Even though the listeners weren't saying much.
Sometimes they are. We've heard a lot of listener
comments
far this hour. So I know you're not a fan of the word of the year. I think it has been an interesting conversation, though. It really, it's been such an interesting year, but every year is. It does feel like there a word or a phrase can capture a moment in time.
It's true. It can. Some of the other words of the year have been populism, which we've seen not just here but in Europe, complicit, and there have been other interesting ones and contenders for words of the year. Like in France, the word of the year was renewal, which they felt it was a renewal with their recent election, but also Brexit, post-verité, post-truth, also populism. So, yes, words of the year are significant.
Patricia O'Connor, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been my pleasure.
Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, she's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. And happy new year to everyone, no matter what your word of the year is. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.